I'm Christian Esguerra, and welcome to this episode of After the Fact, where we get to see things more clearly, and we get a better sense of truth. So let's start by dissecting the news. Starting Friday, Metro Manila will return to yet another hard lockdown to contain the spread of the more infectious Delta variant of COVID-19. This means millions of workers will have to stay home and find ways to stay afloat for the next 2 weeks. The government has promised to provide cash aid. Where the money will come from and whether it will arrive on time is another matter. Tonight, we'll talk about the economic costs of prolonged lockdowns as part of the Philippine government's strategy against COVID-19. What's working and, more importantly, what isn't in this approach, which so far has failed to contain the pandemic and has left much to be desired. Now, be part of our discussion. Send us your questions and comments on our YouTube chat or tweet us using the hashtag ANCAfterTheFact. Joining us tonight, Ronald Mendoza of the Ateneo School of Government. We're also joined by Undersecretary Rosemary De Leon of the National Economic and Development Authority. Good evening and thank you for joining us on the program.
Good evening.
Good evening. Good evening.
Good evening, sir. Good evening, ma'am. Well, let's start with Undersecretary De Leon. So quite literally, can we afford another hard lockdown, knowing that people are expecting, those who would be affected by this two-week lockdown, they are expecting aid from the government? Can we afford it?
Well, we will have to. We'll have to afford it. I think ang naging decision making dyan is looking at the risks versus the cost versus the benefits of not locking down. So locking down versus not locking down, and the decision was we would rather have the lockdown now and be able to manage this this Delta variant early on. We have seen how it has really affected yung mga in the other countries. Actually, I don't think any country was spared for this even the advanced countries. And so we really believe that it's a matter of doing it early on. And it could be, hopefully, we will be effective in containing this Delta variant.
Okay, let's run the numbers, Undersecretary De Leon. So basically, what is the projected cost to the economy of this quick lockdown, at least based on our experience from the previous lockdowns that we've had since last year?
Yeah, so if we're talking about NCR, a week of lockdown in NCR will cost us 105 billion. Pesos. So this 2 weeks will cost us 210 billion.
Okay, 210 billion.
That's
so
right.
So this is the same cost that we actually had during the, I understand, three previous lockdowns. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. And basically, the other question is, why do we keep going back to this cycle? That is quite frustrating for a lot of people. We know that this is something that we have to do. But there were expectations during the previous lockdowns, which basically, to be quite honest about it, were not met.
Yeah, that's right. I think it has to do with the, this is, they call it the smart virus. But I think it's really the cycle of viruses that it will keep on mutating, and then it will actually chance upon that mutation that has more virulent, that is more infectious, that tends to propagate itself, more easily, and that's really your Delta variant. I think it was really because we thought that we have managed actually this. We were doing a good job. I think up until end of March. And then when we did the lockdown, then again we saw that the declining number of cases, but because of this Delta variant, which proved to be more transmissible than the original one. And just to say that, like I said, this is a global pandemic, and all countries are actually not spared from this. At first we know that strict border controls is actually one of the key strategies. So at first we were just we have in the list about three, and then it went to five countries and then six, and then suddenly you already have so many countries, it doesn't make you know, it's not rational anymore to be doing that. And like we said, it's already here, and so the strategy now is about keeping it in check at this point in time.
Okay, I'd like to go to Dean Ronald Mendoza. I understand as early as last year, a lot of economists, a lot of public health experts had been trying to debunk the proposition that it's either we take care of the economy or we prioritize public health. It doesn't have to be an either or proposition, right? But in this case, how do you actually strike a balance for us to be able to break the cycle of having to go back to this option of hard lockdowns to the detriment of the economy and, of course, the welfare of poor Filipino families, which, of course, might is expected to be forthcoming with the start of the lockdown this Friday?
Yes, thank you, Christian. First of all, before I comment, let me thank my good friend Yusek Rose for her service and continued sound advice actually in this area. She is right. This is a global pandemic, and there are many things that actually we will face that even our best policies will be challenged by the conditions that we will be subjected to. Now, having said this, I will, however, try to push the side that we can still improve. And I believe that Yusek Rose actually on our side in this argument. You asked, Christian, how we can protect families. Well, we have to, in order for the mobility restrictions to work, we have to take care of Filipino families and make sure they get enough social transfers, yung tinatawag po nating ayuda. Kung wala pong ayuda ang Pilipino, eh talagang lalabas po siya ng bahay. Dahil no choice eh, kailangan kumita ng pera at maghanap ng pagkain. So I believe that unless we actually fix the adequacy and the predictability and the transparency and accountability of ayuda, mahihirapan po tayo dyan sa mobility restriction. Dahil talagang mahihirapan din po ang mga kapwa natin Pilipino na manatili lang sa bahay nang wala namang kinikita at wala namang pambili ng pagkain. So una po yan, and I believe again, our good friends in NEDA are fighting the good fight on this accountability measure. The other part actually that we must acknowledge is many other countries did a lot better than us. You know, global pandemic or not, we need to set up a strong test, trace, and treat system. Why? Because this is not the only variant we could be facing. Delta is just one. It could be a next variant next year. And that's what the scientists are telling us. So if this is not a race towards vaccinating all our countrymen and women and everything will suddenly be okay. I think the challenge now is to understand that we must set up a test, trace, and treat system that is much more cost efficient than a lockdown. Because we cannot afford to just keep locking down our economy every time a new variant emerges. And I believe many economists, including my good friend Yusek Rose, is with me on this. We do know that we almost have no choice right now because Delta is already in our shores. But had we had a more efficient test, trace, and treat system, we may have slightly more options in terms of the degree of lockdown, the nuances of lockdown, which areas we actually choose to lock down. And we can even develop, this is an argument I've been developing since last year, a competitiveness argument that archipelagic countries like ours are actually much more cost efficient to lock down because viruses cannot travel across oceans and seas. And we have many islands. So actually we can create bubbles so that some of our islands are quite well protected from the virus, but we need a good framework for establishing that kind of system.
Mm-hmm. Now, this question, I suppose, is better answered by people from the IATF or from the Department of Health. But since Undersecretary De Leon is the one from government who's with us tonight, I would ask you this question. Aren't you also frustrated during consultation meetings that in previous lockdowns, what Dean Mendoza said regarding test, trace, and treat. That's nothing new, right? We had been expecting the government to improve that across all local governments with the guidance from the national government. Why haven't we done it yet? For instance, the daily number of tracing, right? or testing. Let's talk about testing. I think we're just going by 40 to 42,000 a day, right? But in fact, as early as last year, the target was 100,000 or even 120. Mm-hmm. Aren't you guys from NEDA also getting frustrated that whenever you're consulted, hey, there's a new variant, let's try to push the button for an automatic hard lockdown? Aren't you asking the question, hey, what did you do? What did you do in the previous lockdowns?
Yeah. Well, two things. One is, yes, we did ask that. And that is the reason why we have actually been emphasizing that when we do a lockdown, it's really just to buy time in order to improve on systems. And that is actually, I believe, what will be very different this time is because we actually insisted on a number of system improvements, so to speak. So with respect to detecting, you're talking about, we're actually using the acronym PDITRV, prevent, detect, isolate, treat, reintegrate, and then vaccinate. This is the last one. So we're saying that all of this will need to be enhanced during this period of the lockdown. We're using this time now and until tomorrow, actually, to set this enhanced systems in place. We're talking about active case finding. We're talking about very vigilant contact tracing as much as possible, making use of this technology-enabled contact tracing apps. But of course, we believe that for many people, especially those in the household and those in the communities that don't really go to you know, establishments that have this top in, top out, then you still need that warm body contact tracers. And so that one is also being done. With respect to the testing, yes, you're right. We're doing something like 40 to 50,000. We do have the capacity to test up to 110,000 a day. But we would rather be very... very efficient with respect to the testing, and that's the reason why we still we still maintain that only for those who are symptomatic and those who are known contacts of a positive case, then you do the testing. So that's actually being being very selective. And like I said, because at the end of the day, what do you do when you find a positive case? Then you know, you isolate that positive case. And if you're already if you have very good contact tracing and you are able to determine who those possible positives are and then isolate them, then you know, that's actually as good as any, and you have actually saved on the expense of that testing, and save it for the one who will really be needing it. And then we have also put in place, actually we have expanded this this triaging protocol, because the thing is, we believe that not all of this more than 95% of cases are actually mild and asymptomatic and do not really require hospitalization. They do require isolation. But if you look at the hospital admissions, many of them, about more than a quarter, I heard, are actually mild cases, and they can actually be brought down to what we call the TTMFs, the temporary treatment and management facilities, which are only about 20% occupied. And but the key there is to have a very efficient triaging protocol. And last year they were only using mobile phones, they only had one landline, and now they have managed to secure a PABX system, they have managed to secure several lines from our telcos. They have this big facility now at PICC, and so that's again a big improvement. And they have been, with respect to the treat, they have been continuously ramping up capacity in those areas, especially those with the surge. And then, of course, for the vaccine rollout, we, as you know, we have already allowed the vaccination of our A4. And even as we continue to prioritize your A1, A2, and A3. And the good news is we do have the supply at this time of the vaccinations, and it's really about ramping up that vaccination, hopefully again for this during this period of lockdown. The mayors of NCR, for instance, have promised that they can do 250,000 jobs per day, and so that will really make a lot, so that we can make full use of this period of the lockdown.
Just waiting for the vaccine supply. Their systems are already in place. I'd like to go to Dean Mendoza. Of course, everything is being said correctly. If you speak with the government, right, they tell us the protocols, the processes, the procedures. But let's talk about the gaps, because there's tracing, there's testing, of course, there's vaccination. But what are the gaps that you have identified? You've written extensively about this issue. What are the gaps that you have identified, which should be addressed promptly, especially with this upcoming lockdown?
Yeah, well, let me first say that these are not even just my ideas. These are actually the ideas of many experts in other countries and even in our own government. So I must say that there are really decent public servants who are trying to advance the correct way of handling this pandemic. The challenge, of course, is collective action and getting everyone on board with the proper leadership, of course, and management to execute as one, right? Now, let me just give one example. The data that we need for a more nuanced mobility control system, my impression is that this data is still not integrated into one cohesive database. So if it were, and I do understand that the government is trying to take steps to make it a cohesive and integrated database, that would allow us to pinpoint exactly where the risks are and perhaps go for a more nuanced mobility restriction strategy if that is actually called for, right? So I believe, so if anyone who goes to a mall these days, or at least before this impending lockdown, and you are trying to use different apps, this is confusing and not necessarily very helpful for many of our citizens. It would be more useful to have an integrated database for all of this, so that the contact tracing and all of the components of this kind of a response would be much more efficient and faster. So you can do all the tracing that you want to do, but if it is delayed, then the person would have infected so many others already. So the timing is everything for this. And so the data, the nuanced data, is very, very important. And we knew this with countries like Vietnam, countries like Taiwan, early in 2020. We knew that that was already necessary. And yet until now, we're still working on that integrated database, right?
Before you proceed with the other gaps, let's expound on that, your database for mobility, right? Why haven't we established a synchronized system more than a year after the pandemic? I understand there's this Stay Safe app, right? Stay Safe PH app. But if you go to malls, for instance, right? You move from one city to another in Metro Manila, I think a cluster of four cities, if I'm not mistaken, have integrated their apps. Pero pagpunta mo sa iba, papel pa, or they're using a different system. Bakit ganun? Is this a problem because of our structure, of our devolved local governments? Where do you identify the problem there?
Are you asking me, Christian? I'm not the government official, but it's public, no? There were some governance issues with the DICT early last year. There was an app they were working on, and that was sort of scuttled because of those governance issues. I'm really being very gentle in my description. And so with those kinds of hiccups and failures, obviously the economic team will face an even bigger challenge trying to resuscitate our economy. So these are different agencies that need to get their acts together so that our economy can come back more strongly. So that's just one aspect. Let me give another aspect, which is vaccine hesitance. So vaccine hesitance has been shown to be a challenge here in the Philippines, but something that we can overcome because our people do respond to people that they trust, you know, like doctors, experts, and all of this. But that will not be so successful if even parts of the government are sort of demonizing vaccination. And I'm referring here to the politically motivated attacks on the vaccine, Dengvaxia, right? which until last year, there was noise coming from this particular issue. And I believe it was also affecting the perceptions of our people on vaccination in general. So I believe these kinds of things, these are challenges within government, the cohesiveness of our own government to try and, you know, unite as one and act as one so that we don't have to do so much heavy lifting when it comes to stimulating our economy and getting ourselves out of it. The third I would mention here, which is, I believe the economic team really appreciates this, but, you know, if there is no confidence and trust in our system, if that is actually being undermined by misinformation and disinformation, even if you stimulate the economy, there would be so much hesitance to begin to return to normal. And I believe that is actually also undermining our efforts to mount a more aggressive recovery. If you think that you're not safe out there, if you think that there could be an impending lockdown because of our lack of capability to contain various variants of this virus, then you won't book that vacation. You won't take that trip to that island in the Philippines. You won't actually make an investment. You'll wait and see until we do a little better. So I believe expectations, negative expectations, is also now one of our challenges, because this will be the fourth hard lockdown if you count the first one in March of 2020. So we are having this reputation in the world as having implemented one of the longest lockdowns ever for the control of COVID-19. That's not a good sign, because that also means we have paid the heaviest economic price to contain the virus, because we do not have a more cost-efficient way of flattening the COVID-19 curve. And that is, of course, our main challenge right now. It's not economic, actually. And I wish Yusek Rose actually brought her colleagues from IATF, because they are the ones who need to answer some of the questions you have right now, Christian.
Definitely. I'd like to ask Undersecretary Edelion. You mentioned that the price tag of this two-week lockdown, of course, the cost of the economy, literally is somewhere in the vicinity of 210 billion pesos. Now, how do you think this could affect our growth forecasts for the year?
Yeah, we're hoping that we'll still be able to catch up, because actually there's still time, and the third quarter is not yet over. May I first comment on the contact tracing that was brought up earlier. Actually, if you remember a while back, actually it was also the NEDA, in fact it was Sec Carl's initiative to demonstrate how this technology enabled contact tracing can really work, coupled with data analytics. We have seen that we are able to increase actually the ratio of a positive case to the contacts. I think it was something like a 1 is to 40 in one case, 1 is to 50 in another LGU. Well, certainly way higher than otherwise would have been if there had not been any this contact tracing. We have even found several individuals that even though they tested positive, they actually went out still in some establishments, and certainly that was also so very bad. And so we said then that if we had this apps and then coupled with this data analytics, then you would not even be allowed entry into that establishments, because you will already be flagged as a COVID positive individual. Now, what happened at that time is there was an IATF resolution, actually, it was approved, that there should be this interoperability of the different apps. It doesn't really matter if you're using different apps. Well, of course, the good news is for those four LGUs there, these are actually interoperable. You just need one QR code and you can go through these four cities. But for the others, it's okay because they have already invested in that app. But actually, you can have a back office procedures which can make this interoperable. So it's really a matter of programming, and so it can be done. And so and then if you still do not have if you do not yet have a contact tracing app, then you can simply you can simply adopt the Stay Safe, and. Yes, the Stay Safe. And that's actually the reason behind this the Safety Seal program of government, DTI, DOLE, DICT, where they actually encourage all these different malls to enlist in this Safety Seal. And if you have a Safety Seal, which includes actually having this technology-enabled contact tracing app, that you know, if you do not have one, just adopt the Stay Safe app, and that will actually allow you 10 percentage points plus additional on the capacity allowed in your establishment. So that's the come on there.
So basically, contact tracing problem can be solved, but on different apps, interoperability that can be solved by the governments with the help of the national government. Pero let me go back to the growth forecast. No? So you said that can still be achieved, yung 6-7% target natin. But when that target was set by the government, was another lockdown factored in, for instance?
Not another lockdown, but we actually did not think that there will be an easing of restrictions very early. So that was part of the base. And another reason why we have not yet we did not yet revise the forecast is that we are we're actually releasing the second quarter forecast on the 10th. When is the 10th? I think it's Tuesday next week. Yeah. So we thought that we'd rather see that first. And we do have some assumptions or hypothesis with respect to the Q2, and if actually the Q2 performance is as we expected or better than expected, then we keep the forecast because we think that it is still doable. But of course, it really depends on the Tuesday release.
Okay, I'll allow Dean Mendoza to answer this question first, and then I'd like to also hear your thoughts on this, Undersecretary Edelion. So basically, the cost of a two-week lockdown is 210 billion pesos. But how do you cushion the impact of that? Is there a way to somehow, how do we recover from this, Dean?
Well, I think we start with protecting our people and our human capital. Our wealth is in our people. Nasa kabataan po ang kayamanan ng Pilipinas. At marami na po silang pinagdaanan itong 1.5 years ng lockdown. So kung mabibigatan pa po sila na dito sa sitwasyon ng lockdown na parating, nakulang pa rin ang ayuda o hindi pa rin po naibsan yung kanilang kahirapan, malaking cost po yan para sa ating bansa. So kailangan po, we need to improve how we protect our people and make those social transfers. So as I mentioned, kakampi naman po nating economic team dyan, it's a governance and collective action challenge because it is being implemented by so many agencies and so many local government units. So naiintindihan naman po natin yung challenge dyan. But they need to do a much, much better job so that the transfers in their entirety get to our people and the adequate budgets for those transfers are actually allocated by our leaders, no? So the true prioritization in this forthcoming budget must come out. It should be education, health, social protection. Yan po talaga ang dapat priority natin dito sa laban against COVID-19. So yun ang unang-una. The second one is we must, as I mentioned earlier, realize that we cannot keep fighting this fight and keep on repeating our main tool, which is lockdown. Matatalo po tayo at mauubusan tayo ng pera. Babagsak po ang ekonomiya natin. Hindi po pwedeng lockdown lang ng lockdown ang response sa bawat variant ng COVID na parating. At ang sabi po ng mga scientists worldwide, hindi po tayo nakakasiguro dahil may mga parating pa sigurong variant. So kailangan po nating palakasin talaga yung test, trace, and treat system. So I'm very happy to hear that even NEDA is now advancing their own ideas on how to make that more efficient. So pati po yung mga economists na tumutulong na rin po dun sa test, trace, and treat. That is actually a, kumbaga, it's a health response, health coordination response eh. Pero tumutulong na rin po yung mga economists natin sa gobyerno. So baka naman po may better chance nga po tayo at umaasa po ako na with good people like you, Sec. Rose, there, ma-advance po yung tamang response dito because we cannot afford continuous lockdown.
Okay. Before I ask Undersecretary De Leon to respond to that same question, we're going to take a quick break. After the fact, we'll be right back. Welcome back to After the Fact. We're still joined by NEDA Undersecretary Rosemarie De Leon and Dean Ronald Mendoza of the Ateneo School of Government. Okay, I'd like to go to Undersecretary De Leon. So basically, the price tag of a two-week lockdown, which will start on Friday in Metro Manila, is 210 billion pesos. How do you cushion the impact of this lockdown and how do we recover from this? And if I may add, para dire-diretso na yung sagot niyo, at the start of the program, you said, I asked you, can we afford another two-week lockdown? You said, we have to. So have we identified, for instance, a funding source of the direct cash aid that will be given or promised to the most vulnerable sectors in our society?
Yeah, so with respect to the first question, it's like what Dean Ron has said. It's really about the cash transfers that have to be given to the most vulnerable. In fact, we are targeting the bottom 80% of the population because we know that it's not just the poor, the very poor who are hurting. Of course, they're really hurting the most, but also those in the near poor. And so, you know, it's actually the bottom 80% that is being targeted for this social amelioration program. Another thing that we have asked the other agencies to do during this period of the lockdown is to ramp up its offerings of online courses on retooling, reskilling, because we know that people will be in their homes. We said that, it can be of general interest, webinars of general interest, but as much as possible, get on with the retraining, the training programs on digital skills even, and then and other online courses that are out there. And this will all be given for free. Again, there will be a rerun of the webinars of the DTI on how to come up for the small businesses, how to come up with a business continuity plan, how to actually get into this e-commerce, because we do have actually a number of assistance that's being given by government, and we think that this is the time that you know, we can actually promote all those programs, and hopefully you know, this time will be really put to good use, so that after this, then because we think that the way to recover out of this pandemic is to transition to the new normal, It requires a whole lot, of course, in terms of teaching us new skills, teaching us new concepts, and we hope that during this time, then you know, it would be the start. Thank you.
Okay, in the ito naman sa ano sa funding source of ayuda.
Oh, the funding source. Sorry. Yeah, that's actually DBM is the more competent you know, agency to respond to that. But I heard it said that I heard them say that it will be coming from savings. But apart from that, I don't know where else. But I'm sure they will have to really source this funds because the economic team actually. Recognizes that this is this needs to be this impact really needs to be mitigated.
Okay, Dean Ronald, regarding the funding source, I think this is a basic question by people. Can the government afford this, even if that is very much needed? And of course, how much is enough, which is the other question. I think what was promised was 1,000 per person, maximum of 4,000 per family. Pero kaya ba siya ng gobyerno talaga ngayon? Is that even found in the existing budget?
I believe there is space, actually. Other analysts and even our own government economists have been pointing out the spaces where we can still carve out efficiencies. We did this with previous administrations. Certainly, we can do it with this administration. Things that we don't necessarily need, things that are not necessarily transparent in terms of how it's spent. This is the time to actually show that much vaunted political will of this administration to try and invest and protect our people. It also redounds to their own political success in 2022. So it just makes ultimate sense to actually reallocate and protect our people. So I'm happy to hear about that plan to protect 80% of the population. But having said this, again, I reiterate, we cannot keep transferring money to 80% of the population with each and every lockdown that we do. We're going to fall apart. Basically, we're going to erode all the buffers we have been working so hard to build in the last decade. So all that work that USEC Rose and others have been doing since 2010 to try and make our macrofiscal situation very sustainable. And now, because of our inability to revert to a more cost-efficient containment besides lockdown, we're going to be spending all of those buffers and we're going to keep eroding them. So I believe this is actually now a race against time for us to try and make use of this lockdown very, very well, protect our people, but at the same time, make sure that we can now graduate to something more cost efficient after this.
Okay. Speaking of something that is more cost efficient after this, I'd like to go to Undersecretary Melion. We've had two bayanihan pieces of legislation, right? And of course, it's still pending. I'm talking about Bayanihan 3. If you talk about social protection measures, have we identified enough to be able to recover from this series of lockdowns that we've had and to basically cushion the impact of these in our economy? Let's talk about the exact projects or programs that need to be put in place from here on.
From here on, we really need to improve our health systems. It's actually the universal healthcare is a good law. It's just that it was signed late in 2019. We haven't really had the time to implement it nationwide. We were supposed to do a pilot of because the universal healthcare talks about having a network of healthcare systems where you have a primary provider actually, and you have this referral system. You know, it's like I said, it's a good law, except that the timing was a bit you know, it's a bit late. But we, as soon as this is over, that needs to be put in place. That universal healthcare. We need to improve on our science research, especially on infectious diseases. We need to improve the capacities of our science laboratories, the RITMs, the Philippine Genome Center. All these things really have to be beefed up. We also need to beef up our number of healthcare workers, especially those specializing on public health and epidemiology. We actually realized during this time that you know, that there's only one public health college in the Philippines, and that's the UP College of Public Health. But we need one in every province, in every, we can start with every region. And so that needs to be put in place.
Of course, many of the things that you mentioned would require long-term efforts, right?
Yes.
If you talk about your immediate programs and projects that need to be put in place, what are these? For instance, yung talagang assistance to the most vulnerable, hindi lang yung talagang ano, hindi lang yung regular giving of financial aid, no?
Yeah.
I mean, that would teach them basically how to fish.
Yes. Yeah, we're talking about retraining and retooling. We have actually identified already 7 systems or sectors that have shown weakness during this time of the pandemic. So we're talking about food systems, health, of course, learning is there, manufacturing, logistics, wholesale and retail trade, and then financial systems. And for all this, actually, one of the ways in which they will be resilient is for them to digitalize. So digital transformation, we think, is the way to go. And we hope to be able to come up with a development agenda that is focused on R&D and innovation, where the intent really is to make them resilient. Of course, make it inclusive. In the meantime that we are doing that, then we need to train our people. We need to, retraining, reskilling. And actually this early, we're also putting in place the different policy reforms that will pave the way for this digital transformation. And that is actually why we have always been hammering on the amendments to the Public Service Act, the Foreign Investment Act, and the Retail Trade Law. Liberalization Act, because we think that this is what will pave the way to improving our digital infrastructure, that's one. And then being able to attract all those strategic, we want the high-tech industries to come here so that we can actually be, we can leapfrog actually going into this digital economy, because we did the survey last year when we had this hard lockdown, and we have been actually doing periodic surveys as well of the business sector and also the households. And we learned that only 12.4% of firms have been able to implement this work from home arrangement. And we think that's reflective of the very low digitalization in our business sector, and that really has to be increased. And we hope that with the, like I said, even now that we just had the hearings of the Public Service Act yesterday, and then today the other reforms, this will have to be these are really foundational. But once we have them, then we need the resources to be able to build the digital infrastructure. Again, making sure that it's inclusive, that everybody will have access to this digital infrastructure, then we can have really that digital transformation.
Okay. Before I go to Dean Ronald, I'd like to read a couple of comments coming from one of our avid viewers. According to him, the pandemic response is directed, managed by retired generals with no training in public administration or health. How can a proper response be expected? Number two, with a mismanaged, if not corrupt, state health insurer, what chances are there of an improved or fair healthcare institution? I think perhaps Dean Ronald would like to respond to that briefly. And of course, okay, bago kayo tanong, ano tanong mo? Would you like to respond to this? This common criticism, di ba? Masyado raw military-centric yung approach ng pandemic response by this administration. Do you think this actually proving to be a bane in this strategy?
Yes, well, Christian, I have every respect for our military officials and their management skills. Of course, their main expertise are in the military area. I think what is being exposed here is not just that top leadership, but the entire infrastructure in terms of how the collective action is actually pushed. And how the cooperation is pushed. Jose Cruz already described one example, the four mayors who banded together and agreed on one system. Why don't more of our mayors actually band together? Because it just ultimately makes more sense to have one database, right? And so these are questions that relate not just to the top management, but also to the way that we are responding to this crisis at different levels of government. So I believe actually that part of the challenge is to restore the trust and confidence of our people that things are really going to be led and managed well. And that is why they are starting to ask questions about whether the right people are actually leading this, whether they have the right expertise. And it's actually a fair enough question to ask on that front.
Okay. And regarding the other question, I think you'd agree with me when I say that this pandemic has exposed the egregious vulnerabilities of our economy, as we are seeing now, right? So basically, how do you address this? For instance, an economy that is very much reliant on remittances, on services, for instance, which have proved to be a very egregious, as I mentioned, vulnerability by ours.
Well, first of all, let me say that even the IMF considered us one of the most resilient economies. I remember the visit by the IMF managing director in the Philippines, and when she guested in AIM, and she said we are one of the most resilient economies on the different economic and financial crises that have hit the world. But actually, the rude awakening is that our model is quite vulnerable to a pandemic, and in particular to that response to pandemics, which is lockdowns. So a services-led economy, very much remittance-driven, and remittances come from mobile OFWs who work abroad, who are also very much in hospitality and services industries. These are things that when you start to consider the risk of recurrent pandemic risks, that kind of a model would then be exposed in terms of potential volatility and weakness. The other side that we noticed is our inability to manufacture even very basic things. So we were very much import dependent in the early months of the pandemic. So we needed to quickly develop some kind of capability to manufacture PPEs to some extent, importing the materials, and then also considering that our food security, as mentioned by you, Sec. Rose, as well as our other sectors in the economy, proved very, very, very much affected by the pandemic. And in fact, not just the pandemic, but the lockdown itself. The pandemic creates a chilling effect on consumer confidence. And this is what is actually missing right now. So even with stimulus, even with the government trying to convince us to spend, if you are concerned that you and your family may pick up the virus out there, even when we were open, there were still fewer Filipinos actually going out than normal. So that's part of the challenge of our model. And maybe it should start to generate that rethinking. And I believe you, Sec. Rose, and others have been advancing fourth industrial revolution type strategies. She was talking about digitalization and other things. That's the kind of thinking that we need moving forward and building back better out of this.
Okay, finally, I don't want this discussion to end in a negative note, but I have to ask this to Undersecretary De Leon. We have our poverty targets, right? So the target of reducing poverty, the rate of poverty in the Philippines, I think to 14% by next year, by the time President Duterte steps down. Do you think that can still be achievable given our contraction last year and our ongoing struggle with the pandemic? And of course, I'm also curious about the numbers. How many Filipinos actually, based on your records, were plunged back to poverty? I'm talking about the near poor families, right? Were very vulnerable in that scale.
Yeah. With respect to those who will slide back to poverty, we actually have we estimate about 170,000 because of this 2-week lockdown. But that's not actually a number that has to stay there. I think with the proper appropriate response, which is really the ayuda, then this could be mitigated. Another thing that we're actually doing is we did this early on in the pandemic, that we are the ones actually who's saying that it's not actually an economy versus the health. It's not one or the other, but you can have both. In fact, early on in the during this pandemic, we identified all those economic activities that can be done during this pandemic. And in fact, that needs to be done. So like Dean Ron mentioned about the PPE manufacturing. So that one, the manufacturing of the masks, the ventilators. We already have ventilator manufacturing here when formerly we did not have any. We did not used to have any N95 masks produced here in the Philippines. And now we're producing about 30 million a month. There's still a lot of room for growth, and that is actually that's also the reason why in the investment priorities plan we have also included all these different manufacturing industries that need to be attracted to the Philippines. And so we have done that for each part of the PDITR, and like I said, all those other things that we think should continue, like learning systems, like the education. So what are the things that the economic sector will have to produce, actually, so that this can go on? And that's actually how we are doing it. And even up to this time that we will have the lockdown, some other sectors will be allowed to operate. Sectors that we deem are essential, especially for this fight against the COVID-19. So we will not really be it's not really, we think it will not be a lockdown just like we had last year. This time we are actually being very strategic. We're also banking on the fact that there has already been this rollout of the vaccination. And so for those industries, probably, or actually some businesses have in fact started vaccinating their employees. And again, that will be another addition to these sectors that could be allowed to operate, depending, of course, on the IATF decision. Now, with respect to the poverty question earlier, we're still hoping that we can meet it. But of course, being realistic, like we said, for instance, for the we think that getting back to the pre-COVID levels, meaning the 2019, then it will mean actually we will be reaching it by 2022. And then with respect to the poverty, we think that again, we will have to slide by a year, 2023.
There's Undersecretary Rosemary De Leon and Dean Ronald Mendoza. Thank you very much for joining us this evening.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And before we go, the announcement of the hard lockdown in Metro Manila seemed to get Filipinos' creative juices flowing. Online, some social media users are creating TV spoofs inspired by the upcoming return to ECQ. One illustrator made a parody called Wheel of Quarantine with Secretary Harry Roque channeling Wheel of Fortune's Pat Sajak while deciding on the country's lockdown status. Another netizen also created a title card of a made-up Netflix show called ECQ Season 3. Despite the light-hearted takes on the upcoming lockdown, others hope the finale of the made-up shows will happen soon. And that's it for this episode of After the Fact. This has been your host, Christian Esguera. You can watch this episode again on iWantTFC or listen to our podcast on Spotify. Now, for recaps and other exclusive content, subscribe to the ANC YouTube channel. Catch up with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. See you again tomorrow, After the Fact.